Today's episode of The Compendium was sponsored by Critical Dice. Stick around for a special offer at the end of the show.
Welcome to The Compendium, a resource designed to help you spend less time learning D&D and more time actually playing. Thank you for joining us this week on The Compendium. Unfortunately, this episode might only be half as good as other episodes are. I don't know what you think.
No.
It may not measure up. I'm trying to think of good half puns here because this week we are talking about half elves. It's our first foray into half races, which I'm excited about because I think there is, beyond just the race itself, some stuff to unpack with the idea of running a half race. And so let's go ahead and dive into it. And first of all, let's talk a little bit about why we decided to start with half elves. I mean, first, one of the things is because we've already talked about elves. So that right. makes things a little clearer to begin with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we started with half elves because they're the best. I mean, just demonstrably, they're the best.
But yeah, they're only half as good as real elves? No.
No. It's not, no. It's not that they're half as good, it's that they're twice as good. It's not divisive, it's multiplicative. It's they get the best of both worlds. They get the best of their human parent and the best of their elven parent. Because, like, you know, they don't live... What's really cool about half-elves is that they have the ambition and wanderlust and kind of inquisitive nature of humans... but they have also like the refined senses and the love of like art and doing things well, even if it takes a long time, and that connection to nature in the Feywild of the elves. So they have both of those things kind of put together, but it's not without its drawbacks. But both lore wise and mechanically speaking, they are probably one of my favorite races because of that. They're pretty great.
So have half races always been around since the first iteration of D&D, or was this something that was introduced a little bit later on in the timeline?
I feel like if it wasn't from the very beginning, it was pretty early on, because I feel like half elves have been around for a long time, and there were some other half races back in the day that didn't really like make it to the present. So yeah, I'm just going to say it. So there used to be a half elf, half dwarf race. And they had a beautiful, wonderful name. They were called a Dwelf. Or if there was a group of them, they were Dwelves. You didn't have 12 Dwelves.
I feel like, you know how like a bunch of, what is it, ravens or crows are called a murder? I feel like Dwelfs need their own bizarre acronyms for like a gaggle of that, or like something. I don't know.
Yeah, they'd be called an Awkward of Dwelves.
There you go. That is such a weird combo. Like, I feel like they're so counterintuitive. I love it, but it's just funny when you think about that. So Dwelves really have been around for quite a long time. So half races are not necessarily something new, but they are limited, right? So there's only a couple of different half races that are like canon within the guides. Most of them that are presented are full races, like tieflings, dragonborns, humans. They're not necessarily split the same way.
Right. I mean, I think in the player's handbook, it's just half orcs and half elves. Although I think there's some other things that kind of come out like later, like if you think about like Asimar and Genasi, and even the Goliaths. So they're like half giants, half genies, and half angels for the Asimar as a kind of counterpoint to the tieflings. So they're in there. They're just not necessarily called that. And then, which I can't wait for us to do this, there's also all of like the half animalistic races, right?
Oh, so yeah. Like the Tabaxi and the
Aarakocra. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where they're just like something people. They're like lizard people. They're like lizard people or bird people or cat people, right? And then there's the shifter? From Eberron, where they can kind of like, they're like half werewolves, kind of almost, you know, or like half druid wild shape characters. It's kind of interesting. So
I wonder why these half races got the title of like half elf. Why didn't they get their own name then? Because there are these other half, like hybrid, if you will, hybrid races that just have their own title. I think it's interesting that, and maybe that's where my confusion came in, is because it's specifically titled a half elf, whereas these other races are not titled a half cat or a half human, or I don't know, whatever way it would go.
Well, maybe it's because a couple of reasons. One is legacy. Like, this is what they've been called for a very long time, so they just kept it. Number two, they're half of another mortal race that is already sentient. As opposed to, say, like an Aarakocra, where like a half bird, it's not implicit that it was another like humanoid sentient species or race. Whereas with the orcs and the elves, it is. So I think that's part of it too. And then also, they were made back when they were bad at naming things, and all the newer ones have good names. Because all this came out in later editions and later books. I mean, that it's the same reason why they're poisonous snakes, not venomous snakes in the Monster Manual. But poisonous means that they're dangerous to touch, but they're not. They're dangerous when they bite you. That's called venom. Anyway, so they just, you know, they get it wrong sometimes. But I think that's kind of why. It's just a legacy thing.
So let's dive into some of the nitty-gritty about half elves and what makes them so unique. And I mean, again, on the surface, you hear half and you think that it's going to be worse because you only get part of something, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't actually turn out that way. You might actually want to play a half elf instead of a full elf, depending on what you're looking for in a character.
Yeah, and I almost always do because they make great bards as well. So, you know, unsurprisingly, I'm a little biased. But the first thing you have to know about the half-elves is, much like halflings and even gnomes in the Player's Handbook, or even tieflings, they don't come from large kingdoms or dynasties or like a big, nation of all half-elves. Because of their dual nature of typically having a human parent and an elven parent, they are the half-breeds of other things. And so they're going to pop up in human settlements and kingdoms and elven settlements and kingdoms. So they are kind of just a mix of those things. And what's really interesting is they're kind of like, have you ever read the kid's story, The Pig Who Could Fly?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So he's not welcome in the sty and he's not welcome in the nest, right? And that's kind of the half-elves is just like that, where when they grow up in elven kingdoms, it starts out okay, but they mature a lot faster than their full elven counterparts. And so they're ready to go out and, like, you know, rule the world. And their friends they grew up with kind of stayed kids, but they also don't live as long as the elves do. And so they're like, well, I want to go and do stuff. And so they're a little malcontent. But if the ones that grow up in the human realms, they grow up just fine with their human counterparts, but they can watch multiple generations of friends and loved ones pass away while they are barely touched by the rigors of time. And so it can be kind of lonely. And also, while they have the ambition and inventiveness of the humans, it's tempered. It's a bit more refined. And so they may find it a little uncouth in the ambitions and imaginings of their full human, compatriots. And so there's always going to be this pull to the other side. The grass is always greener kind of idea, but they're never truly welcome in either one. But that being said, in my mind, the way that they're built mechanically would make them almost as everyone's second best friends, like how the humans are described, even more so because they have that high charisma. They're so good at everything and they could kind of get along with everybody. But the book does describe them being a bit more ostracized. Like, they would never really ever be truly welcome in an elven kingdom, and they would never truly be satisfied in a human kingdom. And so there is these stupendous gifts that come from being a half elf, but there's always going to be this undercurrent of discontent.
Mm-hmm. Like that, just feeling like you never really belong anywhere. I like in the Player's Handbook that it starts off by basically talking about that divide that they walk on, by saying that to humans, half elves look like elves, and to elves, they look like humans.
Right.
And so no matter where you go, you're not necessarily, and that's the thing too, is like, what strikes me there is not only that walking that divide, but you're always kind of being judged about what your appearance looks like. You're not just being like, oh, you're just a you. It's like, oh, you look like a human, or oh, you look like an elf. I don't know. That's just really, that really strikes me.
No, absolutely. So like my mom is from Minnesota, and but she married my dad and they moved to South Carolina, where my dad's from. And when her family would call or visit, they would always say what a horrible accent she had picked up. But everyone that she encountered in the South called her a Yankee, because the, all they could hear was that Northern Minnesota, oh yeah, don't you know, thing going on. And so she was also in a similar way, just never truly of any of the worlds, even though I didn't think she sounded Southern, nor did I think she sounded like, you know, a Minnesotan. But it's just, that's just kind of the trade-off that you get. So I can easily understand how that would be.
So would you say that half-elves, and this is going to be kind of a weird question, but out of curiosity, would you say that they're usually first-generation half-elves? Or are they, like, generational, where this is, like, the 10th generation of mom and dad were both half-elves versus right. mom was an elf and dad was a human, or vice versa?
I think it is more common that they end up being the offspring of one of each, but it is also possible for them to have two half-elf parents. I feel like that's not as common, but depending on the world you're playing in, who knows? But that's kind of how it's presented in the player's handbook. But just like you can have a labradoodle by having a Labrador and a poodle be the sires, but you also could have a whole, you know, lineage of labradoodles that have always been labradoodles.
Well, it's funny that you bring up. No, it's funny that you bring that up, because I think I've told you this. I used to be a dog trainer in one of my forays. Yeah. And what's interesting about labradoodles, or the like doodle mm-hmm. breeds, is that it's usually only second or third generation where you get the hypoallergenic feature, which is what most people mm-hmm. buy them for, is that poodles, people right. that are allergic to dogs, aren't allergic to them. So that's actually what made me think of it, is like, is there some kind of lineage change or something that occurs in like the fourth, fifth, sixth, tenth generation? Or is it something that it only occurs in this first generation and maybe ends up like kind of dissipating down the line? Or like, you know, how does that situation work? So that's funny brought that up as the example, because that's kind of where my mind was anyways.
Yeah. And we have a Yorkapoo, so it's the same kind of thing. So maybe that's why it's in my mind. But yeah, that'd be really interesting and to see how those genetic traits ebb and flow over the generations. And I mean, that means it is possible to have an entire extended family and generations and lines of half elves that could potentially become a tribe, a nation, a kingdom, you mm-hmm. know? So I would love to see that kind of thing.
And it would make a lot of sense if they don't feel like they belong anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Yeah. To find others like them to kind of commiserate with.
And someone perhaps, else understands me.
Right. Exactly. And perhaps that's one of the hooks that a person could use when saying, okay, well, why is my character, my half elf, why are they an mm-hmm. adventurer? Is because there's an element of feeling like you're from the land of misfit toys. And so you find a bunch of other land of misfit toys, you know, a John in the box instead of a Jack in the box, you know, a doll that doesn't work quite right. And that kind of stuff where you're like, okay, well, this is a dragonborn who's lost his honor. This is a, you know, a gnome who doesn't like building things. And this halfling's awfully violent. He's our barbarian. Like, so no one here like works the way they're supposed to. And I find oddly a kinship with these leftovers, these goobers, and they're my found family. And that's always a nice trope to have in those kinds of adventures, the found family trope.
So before we move on to diving, just, I mean, we've already started to brush the surface of like culture and whatnot, but before we kind of move to that segment, there is one thing that I want to dialogue with you about, which is that I think the understanding is that when you've got a half something, the other half is human.
Yes.
And
that is the conceit.
I don't like that. I don't know why, but that bothers me. It's like, why? Why does it have to be human? Why does it assumption that human is, I mean, especially because humans are like the odd ones out. They're the newest people in this world. And so I feel like if you're going to have a half, it would be from an older race that has actually been around longer. So let's unpack what that is. And then also I'd like to get your thoughts on what if you want to play something that's a half elf, but the other half isn't human. What would you do, or what would you recommend for a player or a DM to discuss about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I hear your point about maybe one of the older races, but I think that's actually a good argument for the other side, why it is most commonly humans, because humans are the newer kids on the block in most of these worlds, and they're the most adaptable, right? They're the ones that can pivot and shift and change with what's going on. And so it would make sense to me in my mind that, oh, okay, well, they're the ones who are the most compatible with a tiefling or with, with the elves or the dwarves or the halflings or whatever, that perhaps they don't talk about it in this way, but their genetic code has the most similarities of all the other things. For me, that makes the most sense, because there's not something so strong presenting like a tiefling's red skin and horns and innate magic ability, or the innate luck or fire breathing of a dragonborn, that's going to really clash with the essence of a fae touch creature like an elf. Whereas with humans, you have a very blank slate. There's not going to be a lot of genetic conflicts attribute conflicts. And so I can see why that would be that way. But as far as like making your own, like we joked before about the dwarves, and even in the Tolkien lore, the hobbits, halflings, they say descended from men. Now in D&D they don't do that, but there's a little nod that there is something going on with the halflings as well. I would say is you just kind of think about what is the theme of that race, and then find ways to incorporate the two themes you're doing. And so just like how the Player's Handbook talks about the half elves as being the best of both of their parentages, of the adaptability, ambition, and ingenuity of humans, that's the theme. And then the love of art and the keen senses being the theme for the elves, you mix those two things together. And when we get into the stats, you'll kind of see that being brought out. Whereas if you wanted to do something like a tiefling dragonborn, I love that, because you've got the theme there is like innate magic, right? And them being created by something that is not quite a god, perhaps, but something very old and very powerful. Those are very similar themes. And so, especially if you're going with, red dragon or gold dragon or something, where you've got the fire element going on, then you have it with the tieflings as well as their kind of stock configuration. I could see those things kind of coming together, that they would keep their infernal legacy or elements of it, perhaps. They would gain the fire breathing as well, but maybe the flavor there is that the red skin has just like a hints of scales, but not true scales. And perhaps the
they face, have a tail.
Oh, they would totally have a tail.
There's a way to give your tiefling a tail, folks. Mm-hmm,
there you go. But yeah, exactly. And I would love that. And because they both are prone to having kind of like tieflings have horns. Dragonborns have like the hint of horns. It's almost like that crest you see around like a bearded dragon or some of the different kind of lizards in our world, where the skull shape may be more humanoid and less dragon shaped, but like maybe the horns are more pronounced, or there's, instead of hair, it's just a field of short, stubby proto horns along with the two large prominent ones on the top. I would see that very easily. And I really like that. I've played with someone who made a homebrew race of half tiefling, half dragonborn, which I thought was really cool.
I like that. Yeah, I think another reason why the idea of like why human is like so predominant, I think it twinges back to that conversation we had in our very first discussion into the topic of race, and the idea of our races racist, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And just like making the assumption that, oh, well, it's obviously human. And so I think like that's definitely forefront on my mind. And mm-hmm. I think it's important too, as a player, to understand that there's like a conscious reason there. And it's not just because, well, of course, humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, yeah, I like that. And that's the thing, is that we talked about this at the very beginning in this whole kind of like arc talking about the races, is that race in our world is misidentified, because we're all human, but we like to divide ourselves up for good or for ill, typically for ill, but we're all the same species. We're all the same thing. We just have some very slightly different characteristics.
Right.
Whereas in D&D, these are really
very different
things. That's a bird man and that's an orc. Come on. They're not even close, right? Dragonborns are reptilian and the tieflings are demonic. And then the elves, they're from the Fae. They're not even considered to be humanoids.
They're like, not from around here.
No, they ain't. but so it really is different. And so I've actually seen worlds on like podcasts and things where they don't have half races because they're just like, no, these are different kinds of creatures and they're just not, and they're just mutually exclusive. The genetics don't work that way. There can be relationships, marriages, all that kind of stuff, but it's just never going to produce a offspring. What is it? Donkeys and horses, they make mules, but then mules can't breed with any of the other things. So it just doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. That's a weird example, I know, but
we're full of weird examples in this episode. Let's keep going with it. Let's own it.
Yeah, let's just go for broke. Lean into it. I don't want to. I'm scared. So yes, I mean, it's just very interesting when you think about all these things. But the goal of D&D, as always, is to have fun. And if you like doing this kind of like hot swapping with characteristics and thinking up the lore that would make those things make sense, is that fun to you? Go for it. I love the homebrew stuff that people come up with because it's always very, very interesting and just makes for great storytelling. So as always, do what you want, but here's what it says in the books is kind of right. The idea.
So we already talked a little bit about the fact that, as written, half-elves don't necessarily have a community, mm-hmm. or a kingdom or tribe or any of these other kind of clans that we've discussed as some of the other races might have. They're a little bit more of what would be considered like a gypsy or a wanderer,
yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah, I can see that. Now, I mean, that's not to say that they don't have a home nation. They absolutely would, because the Player's Handbook even talks about how the naming conventions can be anything from the human or from the elven side, and hilariously says if they grew up in a human civilization, they're more likely to pick an elven name. If they grew up in an elven civilization, they're more likely to pick a human name because you're not my real dad, and they want what they don't have, right? Yeah, but it does end up making them loners, wanderers, or even trying to hide who they really are. And trying to pass for full human among humans and avoiding high concentrations of elves since the elves can't get fooled that way very easily and the like. So it's, it can make for a very lonely existence, but in the same way, like we talked about with the gnomes, how the gnomes are typically going to be, you know, part of a human civilization, maybe a tutor for generations of a single family, that kind of thing. The half elves very easily could be, you know, trusted scouts or the collectors of bardic lore in a particular culture and find a home over the decades and centuries that way. So I can see it a lot of different ways.
Would you say that half-elf children tend to end up with one parent or the other?
It would seem that way. And my gut is that they typically end up with the human side more because they're going to be more similar the longest. Mm-hmm. And when they do get that itch to, like, you know, discover themselves, it's about the same time as the humans do too. And so it's a little less abrasive, perhaps. Although the tension and the possible, you know, political intrigue that comes with having that one half elf kid growing up in the high courts of an elven dynasty is really fun too. But that's kind of my read on it. But you know, I've seen it both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something else that the book says is that they're very good ambassadors or diplomats, because mm-hmm. that's where we start to pull in why the half race can be so beneficial, is because they get the grace of the elves, but maybe a little bit less of the the
rashness.
Yeah. Like, how would you describe us humans, of, you know, the human side? And so you kind of got the best of both worlds. And so they're, you know, they would be very good hostage negotiators, right?
Yeah.
You know, you've got that kind of like in between where they're the ones helping countries or civilizations make treaties with each other. that kind of thing.
Yeah, because they're the very embodiment of two different things coming together. So they would make great ambassadors or emissaries, like you said, like hostage negotiation, which is awesome. I hadn't even considered that, where like they can empathize with wanting something you don't have, but willing to be going to great lengths to get it. They're like, yeah, no, I get that feeling. Let's talk about it. So yeah, I love that. It makes them unique in being the kinds of characters that want to bring two sides together, because they are the living embodiment of two sides being put together.
And we already kind of talked about why these half-elves would likely go adventuring. But there's so many story hooks there. I mean, if you're an ambassador, you're just on a trip to get from, you know, this town to that town to deliver the treaty. If you grew up with your human dad, you could be on a quest to meet your mom in the Elven Kingdom. You could just be trying to find somewhere you feel like you belong. There's so many different story hooks as to why a half elf would go out adventuring and join, probably eagerly join a party of adventurers.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, even it kind of name checks bards in there as well. And even thieves, where they can just kind of adapt to any situation. And so they can find their niche in wherever they find themselves. And this one's probably the easiest one to figure out, maybe for humans themselves, of why they would go out adventuring.
So let's dive into half-elf traits. Let's talk about what makes these guys so cool to play.
Let's do it. Everything. So
could you elaborate on that, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Okay, so for half-elves, they get a ton of stuff, like almost as much as elves do, and elves have a huge list before they even get into sub-races. And so it's not surprising that the half-elves would be the similar. So this is my favorite part about the half-elves, is the ability score increase. They get a +2 to the charisma, and then they get a +1 to two other ability scores of your choice.
Does any other race get that many bumps to ability scores?
Yes. I want to say there's a sub-race of dwarves that does.
Really niche. I mean, you have is. To... Wow.
Yeah.
Because that's lot. Yeah, normally it's two. Two, yeah, maybe three.
Yeah, because dwarves get, what, +2 to constitution, and then I think it's the mountain dwarves that end up getting... yeah, so they get +2 to constitution, and then they get a +2 to strength, I want to say, as well. So that's the closest one that has ended up getting 4. So this is a kind of a big deal. And normally you would see this kind of thing happen where they get a big bump like this and then not a lot of extra stuff on top. Like that was the big thing they get. Like for humans, they can get one to two different attributes if they take the extra feat at the beginning. Or they can just get one to everything, which is, that's +6 all said, but it's not as impactful. But here, their abilities and special things just keep going. But real quick, so the age for half elves is they reach adulthood around 20, like humans, but then live to about 180. So pretty comparable to, say, like a halfling would. And then the alignment, typically have that chaotic bend, like the elven heritage. Again, also humans do as well, because of the love of freedom, creative expression, always looking for their place in the world. So that would, and it makes a lot of sense too, because think about them trying to fit in with elven society that has, like, you know, everyone knows their role and there's long-standing traditions that are centuries or millennia old, and they just don't fit into it. And so they kind of would resent those rules and those traditions, wanting to, you know, kind of buck that system. So for the size, half elves are about the same size as humans, between 5 and 6 feet tall. And their size, of course, is medium, and a base speed of walking 30 feet. And then they have a couple cool more things here. They have dark vision. So they get to keep the dark vision from the elves up to 60 feet as if in bright light, and then total darkness as if it were dim light. And as always, no color, just shades of gray. And then they get fey ancestry. This is the big one. They have advantage on saving throws against being charmed, and magic can't put them to sleep, which begs the question, do they sleep? I think they do. They just can't be forced to be put to sleep.
Yeah, because elves usually meditate, right, for their 4 hour long rest. Or their long rest is a 4 hour meditation where they're like semi-conscious.
Right. So they have advantage against being charmed, and they can't go to sleep unless they want to, but they do actually sleep. So it's a somewhat muted version of that feature with the elves, but it's still pretty powerful, mechanically speaking.
And remind me again with charmed, is that just the actual like oh, what's it called?
A charm person?
Yes.
No, there are several
Charmed
mind
condition, like
the
there's the
charm,
condition, that's what
yes.
I'm thinking of. Is that like, is it, what is it specific? Is
It's
it
referring
seems
to the
very
condition.
minute, but okay.
It's referring to the condition because a lot of those mind altering or social spells are going to name check the charm condition in addition to whatever else the spell or feature does. And so here they have advantage against all of those spells that mention the charm condition or are a charming effect. And it'll usually call it out pretty obviously. And then again, skill versatility. So again, going with this idea of best of both worlds, they gain proficiency in two skills of your choice, just whatever you want, which is pretty awesome. That adaptability. And then languages going along with the emissary or being a diplomat, they can speak, read, and write common, elvish, and one extra language of your choice. So they just get a lot of really great things that aren't powerful by themselves, but they're powerful in their adaptability, which is, again, my favorite thing in D&D is adaptability. I rarely go hardcore into a single concept or idea. I like to keep my options open. I like the kind of Swiss Army knife vibe that a lot of characters can have, like Doctor Strange or Iron Man does. And so this only adds to that. And then when you put that along with bards, they get even more skills and then expertise and all this other stuff. It's pretty great.
And that is it for the player's handbook, half elf. If you are playing just you don't get like a sub race option as a half elf in the player's handbook. However, we are going to
However,
refer back to our new best friend book, which is the Sword Coast
Coast
Adventures,
Adventurer's Guide. Yeah.
which I finally had to buy because we were referencing it so much that I'm like, all right, that's it. I gotta have this book. Where there are some variations of half elves that you can play, if you're wanting something a little bit more niche or unique.
Yes. And so what's interesting with the sub races. What's happening here, lore-wise, is they're assuming that the kind of elf that one of your progenitors wasn't just elf, because there's lots of different kinds of elves. And so what they do here is very much like what we did with the tieflings, where you don't just add stuff, you swap out some default things for some specialized things. And so for all of these that are in the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, what you do is you take the skill versatility, the part that lets you gain two proficiency with two skills of your choice, and take that out and instead add this new feature. And there are four main ones. Oftentimes D&D Beyond will reference like the Mark of Detection half elf, Mark of Storm half elf. Those aren't sub races in the sense, but mechanically they work like that because of the dragon mark from Eberron. So we don't include those. So if you're looking through D&D Beyond and you're like, well, wait, there's two more here. That's why it's not really a sub race. It's just an extra feature that has a similar mechanic. So the computer program and algorithm kind of uses it that same way. So the first one is the aquatic elf. Very straightforward. You let go of skill versatility, and instead you get to have a swimming speed of 30 feet.
So walking speed is 30, and you also have a swim speed of 30.
Right, and normally your swim speed gets cut in half if you don't have a swim speed. So this is kind of great. And now notice it doesn't say that you can breathe underwater or anything, or talk to the fishes, but you can't swim with the fishes. And maybe that's because you have kind of like little webbed stuff between your fingers and toes, something like that. But that's really all that one does.
So if you were a half elf with a gnome instead of a human and you had speak with small animals, do you think you could speak with the fishes?
Yes, but only small ones.
A little guppy.
Yeah,
Swim
little
away!
guppies.
Swim away!
Yeah, the you talk to like the seahorses and that kind of stuff. Yeah, that'd be pretty awesome. I'm getting Dr. Doolittle vibes now again. All right. Then, very interestingly, there's the drow half-elf, which is actually maybe the most powerful option here, because you let go of that skill versatility and you get the drow's magic. So you know Dancing Lights as a cantrip. You get Fairy Fire at third level, and then Darkness at fifth level. So just like how the drow have innate spell casting that levels up with the character from the race, not the class, you get that here. And so you give up some skills to gain innate magic that you can use. And again, as always, charisma is the spell casting ability for those. And then we've got the high half elf. And I'm going to avoid making the obvious joke there, but basically they get rid of the skill versatility. Instead, they choose the high elf's weapon training or cantrip. The high elves, they get weapon training, so that they're innate. I think they're innately good with long sword, short sword, long bow, short bow. And they also can pick a cantrip from the wizard spell list. Here, you can do either or, but not both. Right? So that's kind of interesting. But there you go. Like, you get all cantrip. Whereas with the drow magic, you get, like, a cantrip and then two other spells, which is kind of awesome. And then the last one is wood half-elf variant, where they let go of the skill versatility, and instead they can either choose the elf weapon training, fleet of foot, or Mask of the Wild. So there's three options, but you can't choose all of them. So Mask of the Wild helps you to hide kind of in plain sight in natural surroundings. Fleet of foot lets you move a little bit faster, and then there's the elf weapon training from before.
And then just to clarify too, in the Sword Coast Adventures, there's the Moon Elf and the Sun Elf.
Right, so that's other names for Wood Elf and High Elf.
Okay.
Is it?
Well, it's got the Wood Elf in here, and then it's got the Moon Elf or Sun Elf Descendant, which is the High Elf's elf weapon training or cantrip. So basically, it doesn't make a difference. It's just for flavor if you're a Moon Elf or a Sun Elf.
Right, and back in the day, those were kind of the two big distinctions of subraces of elves, was the Sun and Moon Elf, or the Gold and Silver Elves, or if you're being nasty, the Gold and Dross Elves, which is just really mean. And that was kind of an early D&D delineation between, like, the High Elves of Magic and Kingdoms versus, like, the Mirkwood style elves that are nature and forests and things. But we've kind of let that go a lot in the newer editions. So that I see why the distinction's there.
So understanding everything you can do with a half elf, you already mentioned Bard, but what are some of your favorite ways to play a half elf, or what do you think that they really lend themselves to naturally with all of these different benefits that they get?
Right. So, I mean, there's a lot that naturally lend, especially when you consider that for most of the spellcasters in D&D, both Divine and Arcane, the most common attribute for the spellcasting is going to be charisma, because Warlock and Sorcerer and Bard on the Arcane side all use charisma. And then Paladins and I think it's just Paladins on the Divine side. If I remember correctly. So out of, like, the eight spellcasting classes, like, half of them use charisma. So all of those would be great options. And if you look, too, with Sorcerer, there's the wild magic origin, where they have a kind of innate, like, attunement with the Fey Wild, which is chaotic and random, which make a lot of sense. And then you've even got the Fey patron for the Warlocks, which is pretty great to kind of go along with that. But I could also see how that malcontentness, that kind of just never having a place in this world, would lend a half-elf character to strike an allegiance with some greater entity to become a Warlock with their patron. Same way with a paladin, where they have found a god. Maybe the elven gods have accepted them, and they're like, look, if they can accept me, why can't you? But there's an element of anger there, and so smitey smite, they would choose to become a paladin. For, like, you know, to go the other side of the wine and cheese pairing that we always do too, the things that would be kind of like a little outside the normal realm, it's difficult because of that versatility with the skills and versatility with
two things that you want in anything, like two ability increases of anything you want.
Exactly. Like, you could really make it work anywhere, but I don't think lore-wise Barbarian and perhaps Artificer make as much sense, and that would be really interesting because they could do it well. I mean, if they really did grow up in the wilds, maybe they were adopted into a tribe of like Goliaths or half-orcs too. Like, they were like, oh, this makes sense to me. They become a barbarian. Or maybe they live in such a large kingdom that they, you know, sought tutelage underneath a gnome and learned the arts of being an artificer. So I haven't seen those as much, but honestly, they can really kind of slot into anywhere. But there's definitely ones that kind of go with the grain more often than there are things that go against the grain when making those pairings.
So hopefully we've already dispelled these for most people, but what are some of the common misunderstandings about this race that tend to potentially lean people away from playing one, would you say?
The only thing I can think of, because again, I'm biased because you start reading the half elf and the stats and you're like, wow, this is great. But I think maybe the way that we started this conversation was that they're only half as good, right? That there may be a prejudice or a misconception that, oh, I don't play half elves because if I wanted to be a half elf, I'd just be an elf, right? If I wanted to be a human, I would just be a human. They don't get that feat, then I really want that feat. And so not seeing the really wonderful synergy that happens with that lineage and the great things that it can do, I think that would be the only reason why someone might shy away, just not understanding the kind of strength of that.
I think there's also a higher element of creativity needed for this race. It's not quite as plug and play or straightforward as some of the other ones, where it's like, this is your community, these are your people, these are your rules. You have to make a lot of that up for your backstory and kind of mm-hmm. where you came from or what you thought. And so it could, I guess, be a little intimidating for people that maybe aren't used to that process of character development or story development for their characters.
Yeah, absolutely. I think going back to what we said at the very beginning of all of this, when we started with humans, was that if you don't know what to do, just pick a human, right? And we kind of recommended to people, don't start off your very first character as an elf, unless you really, really want to, because there's so much going on. I think that the half elves fall in that category as well. It's such a wonderful sandbox playground that if you're unsure or you're intimidated by it, just you'll get them next time. Get some, log some hours with a different race and really dream up what you want to do before you jump into that kind of really, really deep pool. But it doesn't mean you can't. It's just, know what you're getting yourself into.
And everyone knows it's always good to have a backup character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just write Junior on the end of that character sheet and keep going. Is that how we're ending? No! That was a stupid joke. Keep this in for the full episode. I protest. Thank you for listening to the compendium. I'm glad you're still here. You did me wrong.
We'll see you guys next time.
Just let me hang there. Oh my gosh.
Thanks for listening into the compendium. This particular episode was sponsored by The Critical Dice and The Endless Bag of Dice. If you are a dice lover like me, this is an awesome service because you can actually get a brand new set of dice delivered directly to your doorstep every single month for as low as $6.99. Compendium listeners can actually get a special offer by using the code COMPENDIUM, that's COMPENDM, at checkout for their Endless Bag of Dice for 50% off that first month of dice. That's seriously dice as low as like $3. Just go to thecriticaldice.com and use the code COMPENDIUM at checkout. We hope that you guys enjoyed listening in this week. If you haven't already, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. Jason and I really enjoy creating this content, and it definitely helps boost our charisma modifier every time we see a 5-star rating pop up. The Compendium is also on Patreon, so if you like listening, that is a great way to contribute to the content that we create.
New episodes are available every Tuesday and Friday, or if you're a patron, you get them a day early, so Mondays and Thursdays. And you can always keep up with us between episodes by following us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just look us up by searching for The Compendium. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time.